us this morning. Good morning. The title of the message this morning is How to Pass On Your Faith to the Next Generation. And in the context of this, I wrote this, I looked back and I read it, and the words I used this morning, I found that I was most directly talking to parents. But I do want to recognize that not everyone here is a parent. And for whatever reasons God has, that's just not where some folks are right now. And my prayer is that you'd be able to connect to the or an uncle or a neighbor or a grandparent, wherever you are at this time. I believe that God can use this message to encourage us all to pass on our faith. He may be preparing you for a journey ahead. I also recognized as I read back over this that it may not be easy to hear if you're done parenting. Do not lose heart. Encourage your grandkids. Share your faith. Pass it on. The underlying current of the message this morning is never give up. The underlying current is to never give up. This was from a short video clip I saw. It was short, a minute and a half, and I was like, I like that. And I blew it out to 11 pages through God's grace. I hope that you see that, and hopefully that's evident to you. The video that I saw quoted was a quote not from this guy, but from a fellow named Josh McPherson, and he quoted him, so I'll say that these three hacks are from Josh McPherson. The first one says that your faith does not have to be perfect, but it does have to be real. On how to pass on your faith to the next generation. Your faith does not have to be perfect, but it does have to be real. Your faith has to be seen, not just heard. Your faith must affect how you live. Your faith must affect how you love. Your faith must affect how you get mad. And your faith must affect how you apologize. Hebrews 11, you can turn with me if you like. Of course, if we're going to talk about faith, we're going to go there briefly. Hebrews chapter 11. I'm going to start at verse 4 in Hebrews 11. It says, by faith, Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained a witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts. And though he being still dead, still speaks. And by faith, Enoch was taken away so that he did not see death and was not found because God had taken him. For before he was taken, he had this testimony that he pleased God. But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. By faith, Noah, being divinely warned of these things not yet seen, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household, by which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance. And when he went out, not knowing where he was going, by faith he dwelt in the land of promise, as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs of him with the same promise. For he waited for a city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. By faith, Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed. And she bore a child when she was past the age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and in him as good as dead, were born as many as the stars of the sky in multitude, innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. And verse 13 is a little summary here. It says, these all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they had called to mind what that country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. And brothers and sisters, this is the attitude that we are to have as Christians, and especially as Christian parents. We are not from here. We are just passing through. We are to live like we are not from here. For to live like we are from here brings us to accumulate and gather and hoard. That thinking leads us to secure and tie down and hide what we have. It leads us to protect and shield, lock down, be it gold or silver or property or spouse or child. When your children are fearful, where do they run? When they're young, they run and jump in your bed in a thunderstorm. Do you take the time in the storm to point them to their Creator God? Every time that your child turns to you for protection is an opportunity for you to turn their hearts to God. You see, we're not always going to be there for our children. Are you training them to rely on God and His comfort and their time of need instead of you? Do you live like you're not from here? Are you just passing through? I believe that our children know which way we're going. Your faith must be real. Does your faith cost you anything? Your kids know if it does. Do you tithe? Your kids probably know if you do. Have you been charged incorrectly, either to your benefit or to your loss? How did you respond? Your kids know how you did. Are you living your faith daily or just Sundaily? Your children know. Your faith does not have to be perfect, but it does have to be real. Does your radio and vocabulary change between Monday and Sunday? I hope not. But your kids know if it does. Even if you think you can hide from God, you cannot hide from your children. There's no escaping them. Children are kind of omnipresent. You can't get away. Every time you turn around, they're still there. It's a good thing, as long as you're pointing them towards their Creator God. And where is your life pointing? Your children know. So who here is ages 6 to 12? 6 to 12, raise your hands if you're 6 to 12. Okay, there we go. Okay, 6 to 12, good, good. I have some homework for you. It's not hard, but I have some homework for you. Sometime this week, today doesn't count, so skip today. Today doesn't count. But sometime this week, starting Monday through next Sunday, this is your assignment. If God brings this to your mind and you see something in your parents, if you see their faith, tell them. Say, hey, Dad, I think your faith is real. Hey, Mom, I see your faith. If you are reminded of this message and you see your parents' faith this week, tell them it's okay. But, of course, if you don't say anything, if you don't see their faith, that's between them and God. But if you see your parents' faith, tell them. Encouragement is a powerful remedy for all sorts of ailments, especially in a family. And if you don't like the behaviors of your children, encourage the behaviors that you do like. It makes a difference. It makes a difference. Encouragement is a powerful remedy for all sorts of ailments, especially in a family. Now, parents, we tend to get hung up on one thing or another, so I don't want you to get hung up on the real faith part. That's important, but also, just as important, is the statement before that that says your faith doesn't have to be perfect. I want you to know that this morning. Your faith doesn't have to be perfect. We so desperately want to be perfect as parents. And we often find that we're not. And it's hard for us to think that's okay. It's okay, though. We are not perfect in our Father's eyes. We are forgiven. And that is the way that we should desire for our children to look at us, not perfect, but forgiven. There is a huge drive in us to be perfect. There's this front that we need to put on with the right clothes and the right schools and the right food and the cool birthday parties, and it goes on and on and on. But if your focus is for your children to see you not as perfect but as forgiven, then the weight of perfection is lifted. If your focus is for your children to see you not as perfect but as forgiven, then the weight of perfection is lifted. Because your children do not think of you as perfect, they never did. They do not have expectations of perfections growing up in your home. Whatever you think of as perfection as a parent is just that. It's whatever you think. Your kids don't think that way. They only know how you love them. They only know how you care for them. But be careful how you love them. My dad would bark and chase me to bed on all fours, all three of us. And it was a high riled time. And it was a grand giggly time as a little boy to have your dad get down on all fours and bark like a dog and chase you to bed. And it was a blast. We had so much fun. And he used to scare us. Oh, he used to scare us as a little kid. He would wait till I was coming around a corner and holler at me, and I would jump and shake, and he would laugh. And of course I've joined in, and I would begin to laugh, and we laughed together, and it was so much fun. And then one day I heard my grandma coming down the steps, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna get her when she hits the landing. And I scared her really good right when she got to the landing on the stairs. And I found out right then that scaring is not always fun. I got really hollered at for scaring. You do not scare old people. I didn't know. Because scaring to me was fun. It was just something you did. And so when I was growing up, my dad's love language was boo. And so I did the same. That's what I thought was fun. And I scared the tar out of my kids. I had a blast. It was so much fun. Until the one day that you come home from work, you know, with everything on your mind, and you're busy, and you just got off the phone, and you're walking in the door, and, you know, the grown man standing behind the door with a big, deep voice says, boo! You know, and in my lunchbox and water jug go flying across the floor, and, of course, the whole family laughs, and my wife's like, you can't be mad at him, you can't be mad at him. Yeah, I couldn't be mad, I was still shaking. Be careful how you teach your children to love. Because that's how they will love. They don't know another way. And I say that to say that you will mess up. You probably will teach your kids like me something you should not have. But the idea is that you don't have to be perfect. Just forgiven. Point your children to forgiveness, and they will not be disappointed in you, and you will be relieved in the deception of perfection. That was the accumulation of the first point. Your faith does not have to be perfect, but it does have to be real. And the second point is, do not go down into their world. Pull them up into yours. Do not go down into their world, but pull them up into yours. It may be a good idea until they're six, maybe seven, that you can get down in their level and play their games by their rules and entertain and enter into their babblings and goofy stuff. But after that, by the time they're eight, call them up. Call them up. Gently, of course, at first. Begin to give them responsibilities and chores. Call them up into adulthood. Do they know what you expect of them? Do you hold them accountable for your actions? The process of obedience begins way earlier than eight, so that when they are eight, they are ready to answer that call, to be called up into adulthood. It begins. You do not have to call a child into childhood. They got that. They know how to do that. You don't have to call a child into childhood. John Lipinski, this was one of my favorite sayings that he used to say. He said, one boy is a boy. Two boys is a half a boy. And three boys ain't no boy at all. And it's funny because we've seen it. And it's really funny until you have three boys and then it's not funny. So I have this written here. I don't know why I felt prompted to say this. But if you have three boys in your house, know that God knows you are strong enough to do it. God obviously trusts you. You are enough. You do not have to be perfect. He is. And I do know that there are quite a few ladies who have accomplished raising three men in the same household. And if that's you, encourage those who are in it now. It's a good thing. Proverbs 22:15 says, foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of correction will drive it far from him. Whether you spank or not is not the point this morning, but this truth remains, a child's heart is foolish. Call them up into adulthood. And as I considered this, I distinctly remember four points of being called up into adulthood. There are four things in my life that I remember as statement times in my life. And the first was when I gave my heart to Jesus. I remember that. I don't remember, funnily, I don't remember where exactly I was or who exactly I was with, but I remember doing that. And I remember feeling clean. I think I was four, maybe five. But I remember doing that, giving my heart to Christ. And it was just a neat feeling I knew what it was. And it was new to me. And the second time I felt kind of called up was when I got baptized. And I remember this. I was probably six. My mother died in the fall when I was six, and I think this was I have a picture of when I was baptized, so I'm pretty sure it was the summer before she died, and I remember that, it being baptized, it was in a river, and I remember that. I remember that being that cleansing feeling again of being connected, being baptized. It was not at a church that I would necessarily connect with today, but for me it was real, and I knew it. It felt different. Something changed in me. I was washed clean again. And the third time wasn't as spiritual, but it's sort of spiritual a little bit, maybe not, for a little boy. I remember when I got a pocket knife. Yeah, and I could use it, you know, under supervision, as my dad watched, and he taught me how to use a knife safely. And he showed me how to do it, and it was in the shop. And when he was there and I was there, we could use it together. And then as I grew a little bit, and as I learned more, and as he was able to trust me, I got to have my own pocket knife. And I got to carry it in my pocket, and I felt like I was 6 feet tall, and I probably was seven. But he was calling me to adulthood. And the next time that I felt called to adulthood was when my dad taught me how to safely start a fire. I thought that was big stuff. My little brother couldn't do that yet, but I got to learn about matches and safety, and I got to learn about making a fire and a tinder in the middle and the sticks around the outside, and I got to remember to have a hose there in case it got outside and to use a rake to clear the leaves away and to make sure that you were prepared and safe and you could, if anything happened, you were ready to go. And my dad taught me how to start a fire, and I thought, wow, I think I was 10, and I just remember thinking that was pretty big stuff. They got to learn how to start a fire. These are about calling children to adulthood. And I encourage you, call them up. Give them responsibility. If you don't like the direction your child is heading, what do you do? How do you call them up when their head's out the door? And one of the points that was shared on this little clip was, it says, if you want to change the outcome, you have to change the income. If they are a stubborn child, you have to be more stubborn as a parent. Don't give up. Deep down, a child does not want their parent to give up. They want their parents to be stronger than they are. They want to see how strong you are, and so they're going to test you. That's what they do. But they do not want you to give up. No matter how hard they push, they don't want that. If you want to change the outcome, you have to change the income. If you do not like a child's direction, change the income. So what income does a child take? What are some things that could be considered income to a child? There are a few things. I found three of them. But let me warn you, kids do not like when you mess with their income. This is a big one. I would consider it the main one. I'm not sure. I hope you're ready for this, parents. This is tough. You're going to have to be countercultural. This takes effort. But this does affect the outcome. Here it is. What music do your children listen to? If you want to change the outcome, you have to change the income. What music do your kids listen to? Yes, you can tell them what they can listen to. It's your house. It is your car. It is your money that buys what they listen on. It is your money that gives them access to YouTube and Apple Music and Spotify. And if you think that is a hopeless lost cause, controlling the music that your kids listen to, then sadly you must admit you've given up. And I beg you this morning, do not give up. Do not give up. Do not give up. You can do this with God's help. Controlling the input into your children affects the outcome. The next big battle, here it is. Who are your kids' friends? My parents knew who my friends were. My curfew with my buddy Jason was, have a good night. My curfew with my buddy Denver was, I want you home at 9:30. They knew who my friends were. I didn't have a curfew. It depends on who I was with. You got to know who your children's friends are. Don't roll over on this one. Parents, you are the one who feeds and clothes and protects your kids, except when they have their friends. I hope that's not so. You need to be involved with your children as they make friends, so that as friendships develop, you can have input. This may be tough. Especially if friendships are already established that should be changed. Not only will you need to be tough as a parent, you will also need to be tender as this may require you to be more involved with your child as they make new friends. Parents, do not give up on this. Your child actually wants you to not give up. They just don't want to admit it. Part of calling your child into adulthood is having these hard conversations. Parents, you can determine who your child's friends are. It's just not easy. If you want to change the outcome, you have to change the income. And the next thing on the list of changing income is screen time. How do you handle screen time? Do you handle screen time? How do you handle screen time? Each home has their own way of handling this. There's not a cut and dried approach to screen time. It is such a part of our world that we cannot fully escape from it. And I want you to know that I have seen children who have been completely sheltered from media, who when become adults have no restrictions, don't know how to handle it, and kind of go off the deep end into gaming. I've seen it. I've also seen children, you know, full access to computers with no restrictions and go the wrong ways too. There's not a cut and dried answer to this. You need to walk with your children and know who they are and what their tendencies are. I have seen fully computer literate homeschoolers immersed in all things History Channel instead of doing their homework. What works for you and your home and for you and your spouse, you'll have to figure out. The point is that you are to be the parent. And the point is to be the parent together. These don't work if there's one parent pushing and one parent pulling. It doesn't work. You need to parent together. A lot of families I know at least have a phone basket or a charging station where everyone plugs their phones in or where everyone puts their phones in a basket when they go to bed. That's a good idea. But each of you have to decide how much screen time is and what is it for in your place. Do you shut off the Wi-Fi at night? What do you do? How do you control screen time? It needs to be addressed. And sadly, it is between you, and it's not sadly. I can't tell you what to do. That's not sad. There's no formula. I wish there was a formula that says this works, but it doesn't. You need to discern for your family. You need to lead for your children. How do they affect your home? So again, in the message on how to pass your faith to the next generation, the first point was your faith does not have to be perfect, but it does have to be real. And number two is, do not go down into their world, but pull them up into your world. And number three is the best story wins. This one's my favorite. Whoever tells your kids the best stories wins their hearts. Does the world and its music tell better stories than you do? Parents, don't miss this opportunity. Grandparents, don't miss this opportunity. If you can tell a better story, you win. And it's not in the ability to tell stories, but it's what's in the story that will win the heart of your children. Was God a part of you and your wife getting together in your relationship? Do your children know this? Tell them the story. They want to know how God walked with you. Tell them your faith story. Most of you know this story, so I'm going to keep this moving. But when I asked my wife to go out with me, as I wanted to ask her to date me, we were sitting on a rock in a beautiful stream in Colorado, and the South Platte River. It's still one of my favorite places to fish. And we're sitting on this rock, and we had gone on just me and her went out a little bit, and she caught a fish. It was really good. And I was excited about that. And we were sitting on the rock, and I wanted to ask her to be my girlfriend, kind of, and I was nervous. I hadn't done this. I was probably 20, and I had never done this thing, and it was new to me. And so I was sitting there, and as the sun was setting, and a muleteer doe walked out across the field, and it was about 100 yards away from us, and I was like, wow, this is a neat setting. I should ask her. And I chickened out. I couldn't do it, and the deer left. And I prayed. I was like, okay, God, if the deer comes back, then I'll have to ask her. And so the deer, sure enough, wasn't that long, came back like 50 yards right on the other side of the stream. And as the deer gets dead center to us, a beaver swims downstream, and a hummingbird goes upstream about head level, just above our heads. And they all kind of meet at the same place right in front of us. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I was like, wow, okay, God, take it easy on me. I'll ask her. So do your kids know your faith story? Let them know. Judges 2. You can turn with me. Judges 2. This was something new I stumbled across in Judges 2, starting in verse 7. I'm sure I read it before, but it didn't jump out at me like it did this time. Judges 2, starting in verse 7. And so the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord which he had done for Israel. Now Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died when he was 110 years old. And they buried him within the border of his inheritance at the Timnath-Heres in the mountain of Ephraim on the north side of Mount Gagash. When all that generation had been gathered to their fathers, another generation arose after them who did not know the Lord nor the work which he had done for Israel. Then the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals, and they forsook the Lord of their God of their fathers who had brought them out of the land of Egypt, and they followed other gods from among the gods of the people who were all around them, and they bowed down to them, and they provoked the Lord to anger. They forsook the Lord and served the Baals and the Ashtoreths. And the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel. So he divided them into the hands, delivered them into the hands of the plunderers who despoiled them. And he sold them into the hands of their enemies all around so that they could no longer stand before their enemies. Whenever they went out, the hand of the Lord was against them for calamity, as the Lord had said and as the Lord had sworn to them. And they were greatly distressed. Brothers and sisters, this is what happens when you don't tell the next generation. Ouch. If you don't tell the next generation, they don't know. And they turn from God. It is written plainly for us here in Joshua 2. No matter how great of things God has done for you, if you do not share it with the next generation, they will not know how truly great God is. Share your faith journey with the next generation. Another faith story that most of you have heard before, again, was when my first mom, she died when I was 6 and my brother was 4 and my sister was 1.5. And there was an 18-year-old girl who was between schools and had some time. She went to our church and she felt so bad for this young widower, which was my dad and his 3 little children. And so she went to the pastor and she asked, how could she help? She has time, but she doesn't want it to be awkward or inappropriate. And so the pastor helped my dad and her to plan this little thing that they did. And she would knock a certain knock on the door and he would answer her a certain knock. And my dad would go out the back door and she would come in the front door and she would take care of us during the day. And she would have everything ready. And my dad, when he came home from work, would knock a certain knock and she would reply the knock and she would go out the front door and he'd come in the back door. And there was a hot meal in the oven every night and she served our family for over a year. God cared for us. And that was a touching story to remind my brother when I was with him as his wife passed, that God has cared for us for years, brother. And he will continue to care for you. How has God provided for you? Do your children know? Do your grandchildren know? Tell them. If they don't hear about God from you, they will not recognize his voice when he calls them. Make a plan. invite the family, share your God stories with your children and with your grandchildren, tell the next generations. Brothers and sisters, the best stories win the heart of the children. The world's stories are pale and lifeless compared to the faith stories that you and I have. We just have to tell them. And I didn't think about this until I was wrapping up this message, but what an intro for camp out. We are hearing testimonies from a few of you. I think 8 of you were asked to share your God stories with all of us at camp out over Labor Day weekend. The impact of God in your life through a testimony of his faithfulness impacts generations in real time. I'm looking forward to praising God with you all that weekend. In fact, I actually probably could have gone elk hunting in Colorado that weekend. I didn't make it to Wyoming this year, and my plans to go to Colorado were changed by my brother's wife's funeral, and I was trying to make a trip to Colorado happen, and a friend and a buddy, and we were trying to make something happen, and the dates that worked for them to go was over camp out, and I was like, I'm not going to miss camp out. There was a couple other reasons, but that was a major reason. I don't want to miss hearing the testimony of God in your life. It's important that we tell our stories. Because our stories are truly better than the world's. We just have to tell them. Thank you, God, for this day. Thank you for the way that you have provided for us daily. God, help us to remember the way that you care for us, the way that you provide for us, so that we will be able to tell the greatness of our God, the greatness of you to the next generation. God, it is our sole responsibility to pass on our faith. Everything else that we do in this life fades away. Everything else that we do burns up. Everything else that we have and that we do, that we accumulate, blows away like chaff in the wind. But our faith remains if we pass it on. God, help us to strengthen the next generation. In Jesus' name, amen. Would the chorister please come and lead us in a closing song.